Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for your architecture firm. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our generous sponsors, BetterHelp and Arcat.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Chris Novelli, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, it's awesome to have you here. You're a good friend, a very active member in Entree Architect, throughout Entree Architect, on the Facebook page, in the network, everything that we do, you're always there. You're at the conference, always promoting it. I'm really excited to share your story, share the things that you're doing. I'm really excited about the things that you're doing. I'm proud of you for the work that you're doing. And I want to bring your hard work to our listeners so they can be inspired by what you're doing and maybe follow some of the rules and lessons that you've achieved throughout the years here. Sound good?
Oh, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. And I love everything that you're doing with Entree Architect. I tell everyone that I can that my firm would not be where it is today. 4 years into my business, I would not be where it is today without Entree Architect.
Oh, that's awesome. And we didn't even pay him to say that. So it's
didn't
awesome.
Even pay me. Yep.
All right. For anybody who doesn't know Chris, if you're involved in Entree Architect, you know Chris. He's all over what we're doing. But if you don't know Chris, he's based in Hopedale, Massachusetts. He's a licensed architect, owner of N3 Architecture, and brings a rich experience of 24 years to our discussion today. Beyond his architectural practice, he's also widely recognized for his contributions to architectural education and discourse throughout lots of different media. He hosts a Home Design Academy podcast. He has written a book called The Homeowner's Guide to Residential Design and Construction. He also extends his expertise on his YouTube channel. For the last couple of years, he's been very focused on YouTube and crushing it as an architect on YouTube. And I want to share all of that. I want to talk about podcasting. I want to talk about authoring. I want to talk about YouTube. Not only share what you're doing and how you're doing it, but also I want to talk about the ROI, the return on investment, right? That takes a lot of effort, some money, lots of time to do all the things that you're doing. And often people say, well, what's the return on this? I'm going to put all this effort into it. What do I get from it? And so I want to talk to you about the return on investment for content creation. But before we do any of that, I want to know your origin story. Actually, I don't know your origin story. So go back.
Oh, this will be great.
Yeah. To when you discovered your passion for what you do and who or what inspired you to get started as an architect.
All right. So my origin story is sort of this two-part endeavor. First, as a child, had absolutely no clue what an architect was, had no clue what an architect did, knew nothing about architecture, had no one in the professions, no one in the trades even. And when I was a child, though, I had a pretty big bedroom and I would rearrange my bedroom almost monthly, but I wouldn't just rearrange it. I would actually draw floor plans. And my mom had one of those fold out yardsticks for sewing, right? And I measured the room. I measured all my furniture, drew a 2-scale floor plan, including wall thicknesses, door swings, and even a little dotted line for the knee walls and where the slope ceiling comes up because it was a cape house that I lived in.
If you had no architectural background, how did you know how to do that?
I don't know. It just looked right and felt right. And then I made little cutouts of all the furniture and I would slide it around and I would put it in my desk. And every month I would take out that floor plan and rearrange the little pieces of furniture on the plan and then rearrange the room. And I did that for years.
I love that.
Again, without knowing what an architect was. Then the summer before my freshman year of high school. This is the early 1990s, right? So there's, you know, no internet or, you know, very little internet, no cell phones, of course. I grew up in it wasn't a huge neighborhood. There was only about 30 or 40 houses. But of those 30 or 40 houses, every single house had 2 to 3 kids. So, I mean, there was 60, 80 kids cruising around on our bikes during the summer. And that was our summers in the 90s. And the summer before my freshman year of high school, we were hanging out on the street on our bikes. And one of the guys that was a couple years older than me comes out of this house and starts talking to us. And he said, "Hey, you're going to have an elective class as your freshman going into your freshman year. Take mechanical drafting. It is the easiest A that you'll ever get." So we're like, me and a couple of my friends are like, "Sure, we'll take mechanical drafting.
We easy like easy a. A's.
Yeah, sounds great." So I walk into class the first time and there's maybe about 10 or 12 large drafting tables and no teacher in the room yet. So we sit down and we're just sitting there waiting. And then a couple minutes later, in walks the woodshop teacher, right? And, you know, picture a typical woodshop teacher from the 90s. He's got the flannel shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
The safety glasses covered in sawdust. And he comes over, opens up this large cabinet that was locked and looks at us and he says, "The drawing equipment's in there. There's books over there on the bookshelf. Draw something." He then turns on the radio, takes a bottle of whiskey out of the cabinet, puts a little splash into his coffee, puts his feet up on the desk and shuts his eyes and takes a nap. And so,
you imagine that happening today?
Oh my God. Yeah. Not happen today. So essentially I went through, there's this book on mechanical drafting and the woodshop teacher didn't teach us anything. And so I just went through the book and learned the lessons and was drawing gears and parts and all that stuff. And I absolutely loved it, but they only offered mechanical drafting for 2 years. So going into my junior year, I switched to architectural drafting. Same class, same woodshop teacher, same bottle of whiskey. And this time, there was no books to go for, no reference material. And so he just comes in, and he's like, "Draw me a house." Like, "All right, well, what does that look like?" So kind of figured it out on my own. And I ended up going to the bookstore and getting some magazines and some reference materials. And I found myself thinking about this class, even when I was at home on the weekends, and I just couldn't get it out of my mind. And these, you know, I'm just drawing these kind of generic houses and it was nothing like high level, but I loved it. So I went to my guidance counselor and I said, "Hey, I think that I might want to go to school for architecture." And she laughed in my face, Mark. She laughed.
And it was, the guidance counselors are the bane to our profession. They've dissuaded so many potential architects from entering our profession.
The best part about it is my mother was a school teacher in the same school district, so she had to interact with this person on a regular basis. But anyways, maybe the guidance counselor knew something, because maybe she had some insight, because I'm the type of person where if you tell me I can't do something, that's when I'm going to try extra hard and prove you wrong. So when she laughed at me and she said, "Maybe you should just go to the local community college." And she actually suggested getting a degree, a community college like certificate program in criminal justice. I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of people I graduated high school with that went to college for criminal justice. So I think the guidance counselor was just pushing people that way. I don't know. Maybe she was getting a little kickback from the college. But but I said, no, I'm like, I'm going to apply to architecture schools and I'm not going to apply to the community college. I want to go to a 4-year school or a 5-year school or whatever. I knew nothing about accreditation or the types of degrees. So I actually applied first. My first choice was your alma mater, Roger Williams, but I didn't get in there because I didn't know a thing about portfolios. And what I did is I simply just took those drawings that I made in that drafting course and made photocopies, stapled them and sent them in. And so when I got the rejection letter from Roger Williams, it was based upon my portfolio was not complete enough.
When I went, they heavily weighted the portfolio for entry.
And then so my other choice was one of my good friends had recommended Wentworth in Boston. And I got accepted to Wentworth and I didn't even look at any other schools after that because going to school in Boston sounded great to me. So I went there and moved to Boston and actually I struggled for the first few years. didn't get the greatest grades. I mean, I was holding my own, but was struggling a little bit. Then after my sophomore year, I got a summer internship at a firm in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is near where I grew up. And things just immediately clicked. Day one, I actually walked in. They said, let's go. We're measuring a building. So we went and we measured the building. We got back. And the next day, or even that afternoon, they said, okay, you're in charge. You're drawing this up. And I drew that existing. It was an old historic building on the National Register. And I drew the existing conditions. I ended up coming up with some new apartment layouts and working with the project architect on the construction drawings. And, you know, they kind of threw me into the fire and I just absorbed everything. And I went back to Boston at the end of that summer and I was just reinvigorated and so much more dedicated to my studies. From there, before graduating, I had two more co-op semesters and I did one at a large firm in Boston and I really didn't fit in there. And I did another co-op at actually a development company. And that was interesting work, but I really didn't like it. So upon graduating, I went back to that first firm that I worked in, that I had that first internship at. And day one, walking in, now I'm a college graduate. They say, here you go, Chris, here's a project. You're taking it start to finish. So day one, I was, you know, project manager.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that they ran things. They would throw you into the fire and they would give you support and help when you needed it. But I was pretty much a project manager from day one. Then fast forward about 5 years. I was working there for 5 years. And my degree from Wentworth was in architectural engineering. So I couldn't get licensed with it. So I needed to go back for a master's degree. But at that time, I had been working for 5 years, right? And I had met my wife, or my future wife at the time, and we had an apartment together. So I didn't really have a lot of options. I was pretty reliant on that income. So the Boston Architectural College offers a Master of Architecture. And the way that the BAC runs their program is you are required to work and classes are at night. And you actually have to, as you progress through the BAC, you have to achieve certain thresholds in your firm, in your career, in order to advance in the degree. Of course, coming in day one, I mean, I already had all my experience for sitting for my license day one. So they just kind of like put me right at the top in terms of experience, but I just had to go through the classes for the MArch. While I was doing my MArch, my wife and I got married. We bought a house and had a mortgage. And I had my first child was born all before graduating. All throughout that time, I stayed at that firm, that same firm, which was in Springfield. So it's a 2-hour drive to Boston and a 2-hour drive back, driving back and forth across the state. And that firm kept promoting me. They kept paying me an above average salary. They supported me while I got my degree, giving me, you know, time off, flex time for the family. And I ended up staying there for 20 years. And I counted at one point, during those 20 years, I designed and managed over 150 projects from, and again, it was every sort of project manager almost functioned as a sole practitioner, right? It's like, here's your project. You're involved from the initial client contact all the way through the close of construction. And the principals are there if you need help, but it's basically you're running the show. You're doing all the drawings. There were some younger drafters to help, but essentially you're running everything. So, and that's where I was up until 2020, where I get a phone call. COVID has just started. They say, Chris, we're letting you go.
Oh.
Yeah. And so
that was abrupt.
The principal of the firm at the time, he wasn't the original principal when I first started, but he had taken over partway through my tenure there. I think he was inching towards retirement. And I think that he had always thought that he would sort of pass the firm along to me or have me buy into to ownership or whatever. But I don't know. It's just didn't work out. And so, you know, I was let go and I had a choice. Do I find another job or do I try what I've always dreamed of and starting my own firm, so hanging out my shingle? And so I've had a few side projects while I worked at that firm. They didn't really care, just as long as it wasn't a competing project type or I didn't do any work in the office. So I had four or five houses that I had completed on the side. And I actually had a side project going at the start of 2020. So I'm like, hey, I've got some work. If I don't try this now, I probably never will. So that's where I tried. And so I started N3 Architecture, and here we are 4 years later, going strong.
Wow. What a story. So what was the first thing you did when you started your own firms? Because it wasn't really planned. It was sort of, you wanted to, right? You had this expectation that someday you would do it, but suddenly because of COVID, you got a phone call and one day you had a job and the next day you didn't. So what was the first thing you did?
Well, the first thing I did was actually something that I had been thinking of for a long time. See, back, even though that firm was located in Springfield, Massachusetts, in about 2016, my wife got a new job in Boston. So we moved to where we're living now, which is an hour and a half away from Springfield. So I was driving an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back every single day, 3 hours in the car. And, you know, it gets sick of listening to the radio. So I got heavily involved in listening to podcasts. Entree Architect podcast, number one, of course. Pat Flynn, Gary Vee. And I would just spend this time driving back and forth on the highway, thinking about all the things that I would do differently if I was to run my firm or take over that other firm. In the meantime, I had this idea of, okay, you know, I'm making a good salary, but, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to get some passive income going even while I'm an employee. So I had the, you know, highly original idea of creating plan sets, right? No architect has ever thought of that. I had a little twist on that. And I thought I would create plan sets, but I wouldn't just have them on my website. I would actually call up all of the contractors in Massachusetts one by one that worked on residential projects. And I would introduce myself, maybe have a coffee meeting with them and say that, hey, I've got these plan sets. I'm a licensed architect. I'm from Massachusetts. I know the regulations here. These are houses that are not designed for a generic location. These are designed for this climate. And so I had that idea of creating those Massachusetts-centric plan sets. And then I would support that with a podcast. And the podcast would be dedicated to homeowners and teaching homeowners some things about design and construction. So early 2020, early COVID, I had actually recorded a few podcast episodes before being let go. So I just started recording weekly and started slow. I was talking into my cell phone the first few episodes. Audio quality was awful, but eventually, you know, got a microphone and got some better software and started going from there.
That's a great tip, a great strategy to launch. Right? Put together the designs that you already know, right? You have the skills to do this. You don't need a client. Design a bunch of houses, put together plan sets, and then go hustle. Get out there, knock on some doors, talk to people who potentially might be able to buy them, you know, have them buy them, and then follow up with an upsell for services. Say, hey, I can also provide the architectural services that come along with this. Was that successful? Did you get projects that way?
So again, that was a thought that I had while I was still an employee. And so I did those first couple months, I drew up three house plans and I did contact a number of contractors and I had a few sales, not anything great, but a few sales. But then I had a conversation with one of the big online plan set companies. And I had these conversations and they were selling me on how great their website is and how much money I was going to make selling if I sold my plans through their website. And so I'm like, hey, I'll give it a try. So I put those three plan sets up on this website. And by doing so, they said that I couldn't sell them otherwise. So it was only through that website and didn't get any sales at all. And what I realized is a lot of those plan set websites, I'm not sure if all of them do this, but at least this one did. They have their own in-house designers, right? And so whose plans do you think they're going to promote on the front page of the website? They're the plans that they're producing because then they don't have to pay part of the royalties. And so within a couple of days, my plans that were uploaded were quickly on page 5, page 10, and then lost into the abyss of the website. So I sort of gave up on that because by then, you know, now we're talking like June or so, June, July of 2020, I had a number of projects going on my own and I just sort of gave up on that part. But I was still, I still wanted to focus on this podcast because there's an opportunity, you know, for people to discover you, and there's an opportunity for you to, one of the things that's great about a podcast or any sort of content is you can answer the questions that your clients have, and then future clients, when they have those same questions, you can direct them back to that content and say, here's what you can do, X, Y, Z. And if you want to learn more, here's a link to the podcast where I talk about it. And so that's what I did. And I continue with the podcast still to this day. Right now, it's mostly turned into the audio from my videos being extracted, but I still do interview contractors, and I've interviewed product reps. That's been really good. I interviewed the creator of Warmboard one time and posted that episode, and then got a call a couple days after I posted the episode from a client two towns over from me who was interested in using Warmboard, searched up Warmboard, came across my podcast, learned that I was right next door to him. And that's a client that hired me, and I designed a custom home for him. So
yeah, direct ROI on podcast.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And the podcast, you know, it's a smaller podcast. I think it's under 20,000 downloads, or just about to hit 20,000 downloads. At its peak, it was getting about 900 downloads per month, but I think now it's only getting about 200 or so.
Yeah. Well, podcasting has grown, right? There's a lot of competition.
Yeah.
But it's not only about the downloads, especially with the podcast that you've created. Your podcast is really designed for an audience of your local potential clients, right? And so you're really looking for people who are local, who are interested in the work that you do. So it's not really about the numbers. It's about the focus of who you're reaching with those numbers.
Yeah. And it's not even local too. I've gotten inquiries to work on projects outside of my local area. And then even once a couple of years ago, I was contacted by a family who lived in Seattle, and they were moving to Massachusetts, and they had listened to my podcast, and I was the first person they called when they were thinking of building a new home. So
yeah, the podcast is called Home Design Academy, if anybody wants to check it out. You're also an author. And so talk about that. When did the book come into the story?
So I've always been interested in passive income. I've listened to Pat Flynn for years. I've listened to the tips that you give your listeners to years. Obviously, I've, you know, read Eric Reinholdt's books and went through his course and follow his story. And so I think it was around 2021, maybe, I see this notification through Entree Architect, a new mastermind group being formed for passive income. And I said, I've got to be part of this. So I joined that passive income mastermind group, which is fantastic. It's a, you know, group of people. We're all working on our passive income projects, and we get to brainstorm with each other and bounce ideas back and forth and get feedback. And so my first project through that group was taking, I thought if I took all of the episodes that I published for the podcast, that content that was already created, modify it a little bit, and then put it into a book form that I could sell it on Amazon through Amazon self-publishing. And that is very easy to do. So most of the content was already there. I just had to reorganize it, retype some things, and add to it, and upload it to Amazon. And you can go to Amazon and buy the paperback version. I also wanted to put up a PDF download, which you can also get through my website. And I use a service called ConvertKit to sell that and then manage my email list. And the good thing is, well, one of the things is when you talk to people about creating products, you always, I always think of like, okay, how are you going to promote those products? And for me, I had this podcast that was getting 900 downloads a month. So I'm like, okay, this is a perfect opportunity. If I write this book, put it for sale on Amazon, I can have an intro and outro pre-recorded on the podcast that says, hey, go buy my book, or see the show notes for a link to buy the book. And it doesn't get a ton of sales, but you know, I'm selling 20 or 30 copies a year. And so that's a little bit of passive income. But an even better outcome of writing the book is, since this book is directed towards home questions that homeowners have and explaining each of the phases of the design and construction project, what they can expect during the phases, what they should be doing, what their architect should be doing, what their contractor should be doing. It makes for a perfect sort of gift to give to potential new clients. So as I have this onboarding funnel, this 3 or 4 step onboarding funnel for new custom home clients. And when they get to the stage where we have an in-person meeting, I bring a copy of the book and I leave that with them. And that goes a long way to showing not only your authority, but your knowledge and you're willing to work with people. And I think that is even more of a benefit than the few sales that you get through Amazon.
Yeah, it certainly sets up the credibility and the authority that you have, right? You're not just another architect. You're an architect who's an author, a podcaster, right? You're presenting yourself as an authority in both of those situations. How hard was it to do the publishing? You had the content already. What was the process of doing that?
So I would write every week. Like I said, I had a lot of the content, but it was mostly bullet point lists for the podcast topics. And I had to turn each of those into, you know, paragraphs and chapters. One thing that I highly believe in is time blocking. And so I have 2 hours time blocked every single morning. It's on my calendar. I don't schedule meetings during that time. I don't check email during that time. I don't take phone calls during that time. And each day, that 2 hour time block is dedicated to a different topic. So Monday, I dedicate the time block to business systems, networking, and outreach. Tuesday is dedicated to passive income. Wednesday to email list and social media posts. Thursday is all for learning. And then Friday is speculative projects, which is oftentimes just me sort of sketching these wild ideas that I can, you know, maybe use sometime. So that Tuesday time block, every week, I would spend those 2 hours writing a chapter of the book or a section of the book. And it takes a long time, right? Because if you're only dedicating 2 hours per week to it, it does take a while. But, you know, it's that incremental progress over time that really matters. And, you know, I think it took me, you know, 9 or 10 months to write the whole thing. But once it was done, you export a PDF, you design a little cover image, and the Amazon KDP website has a little cover template that I think that you can help with, or you can design your own and upload your own. And then you simply upload it and set a price and write a description, and it's for sale and you're an author. And they give you the ISBN number and everything. So they take care of that on that end. And you don't have to worry about printing. You don't have to worry about storage. And for if you're doing a self-publishing thing like I did, that's a real simple, easy way to go.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Architects, listen up. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world and is going through a hard time, therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a very different way. I know this community of small firm architects very well, and I see many of you struggling. That's why I reached out to this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote. And by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you with a professional therapist in as little as a few days. It's easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There's a link in the show notes. It's betterhelp.com/architect. Just use that link, betterhelp.com/architect. Clicking that link helps support this podcast, but it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp. So you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you. If you need someone to talk to, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/architect. That's betterhelp.com/architect. Thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast and for supporting our community of small firm architects. For over 30 years, RCAT has been providing AEC professionals with high quality and up-to-date building product information. Today, RCAT.com is much more than a product catalog, with BIM, CAD, and specifications created in collaboration with manufacturers. Beyond that, RCAT.com also offers lead data, continuing education resources, newsletters featuring the latest projects and products, and don't forget, detailed podcasts. RCAT.com is truly the one-stop shop for everything architecture. Try it out. Go to RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. You're so inspiring, Chris, to recognize that you've built this podcast, you've written this book. I love your strategy of having dedicated time block on your calendar to get it done, right? If you don't do that, it doesn't happen, right? You can dream all you want.
You can dream all you want.
And you could hope that it's going to happen, and maybe you plug it in here this week and then next week you don't do it. But when you have those dedicated time blocks on your calendar, you get things done. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how powerful that strategy is.
Yeah. And going back to when I was an employee driving back and forth on the highway 3 hours a day, I would dream all the time and I never took any action. So once 2020 happened, once COVID happened, and I had this opportunity, it was actually something from Pat Flynn, a quote from Pat Flynn that really, really triggered it in my mind. And he said, "What does this time make possible?" Right? And that has stuck with me. Yeah. And I said, from that moment forward, I said, I am not going to just sit around and dream. I'm going to take action. Right. And then, of course, through now going, switching from an employee to a firm owner, I became much more involved in Entree Architect. And Entree Architect, especially the network, if you're not part of the network, go join the network, because that is all about taking action.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Chris mentioned Pat Flynn several times. His platform is Smart Passive Income. If you're looking for it, look up Smart Passive Income. He does lots of things, but if you look up smartpassiveincome.com, you'll find Chris. Also, you mentioned Eric Reinhold. He's been on the show several times, but if anybody's looking for his books and his information, it's 30 by 40 Design Workshop is his platform. He's a great YouTube channel. Lots of content on his website at 30 by 40 Design Workshop. So, podcasts, you got a book. You mentioned that part of the book strategy is selling it through ConvertKit, which I'm assuming is building an email list.
Yes.
What do you do with the email list?
So I recognized that it could be pretty obvious, but not everyone's going to run out and buy your book just because you say you have a book for sale. So people need something that they can get easy access to, that they can get a quick win from, and that can give them some value immediately. So I created a lead magnet, a free download, 5 tips on how to get started on your project. And I promoted that on the podcast as well. And so when people go to my website and they download that PDF, they get put into the ConvertKit email list and they get put into a sequence. And they get one email a week from me with extra sort of great tips. And at the end of the sequence, it culminates with an offer to buy the book, right? And so you give them the lead magnet, you provide that value, you provide additional value with the weekly email sequence. And then, you know, just like the Gary Vee jab, 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 right hook, right? Give, 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 give. And then you say, by the way, here's a book for sale. Maybe they'll buy it, maybe they won't. But what I have also done with the email list is people who have bought the book or at least have downloaded the PDF copy of the book, they also get put into the email sequence, but they get put into the email sequence after that offer, right? Since they've already bought the book, they don't need the offer to buy the book. And then from there, I think I don't do as much with the email list as I should or I could. Right now, it's weekly emails that go out, and I think there's, I don't know, 60 or so of them. So, you know, it's over a year long. And just different tips every week to homeowners. So, you know, that's another good way to sort of build up the authority and allow people who haven't made that purchase yet to get more comfortable with you.
Yeah. I love this strategy that you're revealing here, right? That you start your firm, you start a podcast, that podcast benefits your firm. Then you write this book, which then ties into that strategy, right? You start talking about the book in the podcast, driving people to go buy the book. Then through that, you're starting to build an email list. Now you have lots of people who, now you have an email list, you have a community you can contact, you create this newsletter. And through a sequence of emails that are automated through the system, you start selling the book, which then does this cycle over again, right? You create authority, you create a reminder of who you are. It becomes this machine, right? And I love how it sort of builds on one, right? You don't have to do it all in one shot, right? You're talking about over years you've built this.
Yep.
So you just start one thing and then you build on that and then you build onto that. And it's not these separate pieces that you're building that have nothing to do with one another. Individually, they are all beneficial, right? If you had just one, that would be beneficial. But the fact that you're building this on top of one another and they're becoming this system is really impressive.
Thanks for all that, Mark. But it's not just about selling the book too, because I've had clients who started off by downloading that free five-step guide on getting started on your project. And then they've seen the emails come in weekly and they're reading them and they're not ready to do a project yet, but a year or two down the line, they were ready. And I've had people that started off by downloading that free guide, have read my emails for a year, and then have contacted me for a project. So it's the long game. All of this is a long game strategy that, you know, you start it now, you put in the work, you get a little bit better over time, and in the future, that's when you get the big payoff.
Right. Ultimately, people work with people they know, like, and trust, right? You want to build a relationship with somebody.
Yeah.
Because that's how you're ultimately going, right? The name of the game for architects is to get the next project, right? You're not doing all this stuff just to be an author and to be a podcaster and the cred that comes with that. Ultimately, you want new projects. You want projects to be able to design and have great buildings that you can create architecture for and affect people's lives. This is just a strategy to get there. And I love that this is this long-term, you've built it long-term, but also the strategy itself is this long-term process that they build this one little thing, they get introduced to you, they hear you on the podcast, then they get the emails, they learn a little bit more about you. By the time they meet you, by the time they're ready to do a project,
yep,
they not only are ready to start their project and they've been educated about how that process works with you, so you don't have to go through that process, which so many architects struggle with, right? You've set those expectations up front, but they already know you, right? When you knock on the door, they're like, Chris, how are you? Right?
Yeah, that, yep.
Right? That's what happens.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when you start talking about video, because now you're not just in people's ear or they're reading your words, but they're seeing you, you know, then you really get to have those moments.
Yeah. And you mentioned YouTube. I introduced you that you do YouTube. When did the YouTube strategy start and how does that build into the system that you've created?
So, you know, getting back to that mastermind group that I'm part of, 2022 was the book project. 2023, I wanted to start something new. You know, YouTube can be a source of passive income. Again, we're talking about for small channels, it's a really low amount and it's a long game. But I wanted to look at the reach that video has because, you know, while podcasts is great and while writing blogs is great, video, I think, has even more potential. And so if you think about just as a search engine, what YouTube is the number two most used search engine in the world. And when people are looking to learn things, most oftentimes they're looking to learn from video. So I think, you know, if you're not producing videos, even short, small scale videos, you're missing out on an incredible opportunity. So I have this podcast, I have this book, I have all this content. So it just made sense to, again, take the content that was already there and start transitioning that into videos. So if you looked at the amount of podcasts I had published at that point, I could easily, without very much effort, have scripts or have, you know, ideas for many videos. And I didn't really, that sort of initial sort of work of coming up with the content, of thinking about, oh my God, what am I going to produce? That was already done for me. Right. So I would just took a podcast episode, took a chapter from the book, reformatted it, and set up my camera. I already had a decent camera. And my brother's a videographer in Maine, and he gave me an old lav mic that he didn't use anymore. And I got an expensive light. And I just set up my camera in my dining room and I just talked to the camera. And it doesn't have to be anything complicated. Keeping it simple, just a talking head video, giving tips to people, the questions that they ask. Again, what I was saying before about when someone asks a question, you can point them to the podcast. It's even better when you can point them to the video. And so, you know, a good simple strategy, if anyone's thinking about starting doing videos, a good simple strategy is just that talking head straight on shot with a couple of tips, keeping it simple, just a 5-minute quick video. You can easily write out 20 or 30 questions that homeowners always have or your clients have. Doesn't have to be homeowners. And if you take each one of those questions that they have or tips that you might want to give them, you can easily come up with a couple of bullet point topics to record a 5-minute video and set up the camera, have an inexpensive mic so you get some good audio quality, and just record and just talk. That's all you need to do. Just talk like you were talking to your friend. And if you make a mistake, don't stop and start over. You don't need to. Just make a mistake. Just keep on going. And then you can bring that video into an editing program. There's DaVinci Resolve, which is a very powerful program and free, by the way. Or if you're already an Adobe subscriber, you can use Premiere. That's what I do. Since I already have Adobe, I just use Premiere. And all you have to do is delete those pauses, delete those mess ups, and export. And that's all you really need to do for a simple video. So we're talking about less than 15 minutes of recording and less than an hour of editing. Add that to your weekly time block, and you can simply, you know, it doesn't take a lot of effort to create this content. And you don't have to upload every day. You don't have to upload every week. I think I was doing every other week at the time. And my goal was I recorded 3 of those videos every week, and then I would upload 1 every other week. So I'd build a backlog. And that way, summer comes along, you want to take a family vacation, you don't have to worry about it because you've already got those videos pre-scheduled.
And the content is all content that you've had from your podcast and book. But even if you didn't have a podcast and a book, architects have a system when they interview with a client. You answer the same questions over and over again, right? Every time you meet with a potential client, they ask you the same questions. You give them the same answers. Those answers are in your head. And so that right there is 2 months worth of content.
Yeah, exactly. And by stretching that out, you can even make it last 6 months, you know?
Yeah. So it's all there. You already have it in your head. So you don't even need to prepare what you'd say because you already know what to say. I want to get into the ROI of all of this, right? You're talking about all these things that you've built. There's been a lot of time. It's taken you many, many years to develop what you've built. Clearly, it's beneficial. Clearly, it's successful for you. I want to know specifically, right? Because this is the question everybody asks me. Well, what do I get for doing all of this? Does it actually get me a new project? Do you have an example of a direct connection from the work that you've done on content to a project that you've designed and built?
Yeah. So I've mentioned a couple of people who have contacted me by listening to the podcast, 3 or 4 listeners who were converted into paying clients. And same thing with the YouTube channel. I've had several people contact me. This one in particular that I want to talk about was just recently, just before the holidays. I get a call from someone and I'm talking to her and we're talking about her project. And she said, "Oh, by the way, I love watching YouTube videos and I've been watching YouTube videos on contractors and construction and architecture and design." And then for some reason, just kind of by luck, I stumbled across your videos and I loved them. And she goes, "Chris, I watched every single one of your videos." And then I realized you were 15 minutes away from where I live. And she goes, "This sounds like a no-brainer. Let's work together." And so I stopped her right there and I wanted to put her through my normal onboarding process. So I sent her back through the website just so we could go through all the steps because I like having those different touch points. We get to the point where we're having our first in-person meeting. Of course, I brought a copy of the book with me and I show up and she opens the door and she goes, "Oh my God, Chris, I watch you on my TV and now you're here in my living room." She's like, "This is amazing." And so we have this nice conversation. We sit down at her table and I notice she has a notebook full of notes. And those are all notes that she has taken from watching my videos. So now I got to be on top of my game, right? I don't want to contradict myself. But it was, I mean, she knew me. She obviously trusted me. And it's converted to a new custom home project.
A new home.
We're just signing them right now. And we're going to get going on it this spring.
Yeah. There you go. ROI. Period. Impressive. Very impressive. I mean, it explains the effort, right? It identifies the work that you've put in with the podcast. You have the book, the YouTube channel, the email list. It all starts to connect and you have a direct ROI, right? You have projects that you can say that project came from the work that I've done with content. Very impressive and inspiring.
Thanks, Mark. There's another ROI as well that isn't necessarily, well, it could be monetary related, but you can use the content that you produce to have clients self-select, clients that are ideal clients for you, right? So if you want to work on a specific project, you can put out the content around that specific project type. And that content will draw those people in. And it might not be immediate. It takes some time, right? But it draws those people in, pushes away the people that are not ideal clients. And so the ROI of not wasting time talking to someone who's not going to be an ideal client, that's just priceless, right? And the ROI of getting the work, getting more of work that you actually want to be working on is even better.
Yeah. If you want to see Chris's website, you should go check it out because the website is also really well done. It is a website that's designed to have an ROI, right? It's not a portfolio website. It is a site to make sure that the people who land on that site are self-selecting and gives them a process to bring those ideal clients on board with Chris. So check it out at n3architecture.com. You should definitely go see that.
And that website was created with a collaboration with ArcMark and Brian McCartney. And we had several brainstorming sessions about what we wanted the website to be and how we wanted it to perform. So
yeah,
Brian and his team did a great job on it.
You can learn more about Brian and Kelly and the team over there at ArcMark. They're great friends, great collaborators at Entree Architect. ArcMark.co is the website for them. Chris, thank you for coming by here and sharing your story, it's tremendous value in terms of strategy. Every sentence you said is like, oh, there's another great idea. Oh, there's another great idea. I'm sure there's lots of people who are going to listen through this again and take notes a second time. So thanks for coming by and sharing all of that. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, what's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Absolutely, Mark. And I'm going to give you two things because I got to break the rules here.
No problem.
The first thing, and again, I'm not paid to say this, but join Entree Architect. You can join the Facebook group. You can listen to the podcast. Those are great. The YouTube channel has lots of videos, all the context and clarity, live replays and interviews. So much great content there. But you should really join the network. Join a mastermind group. Come to the annual meeting. Those will be the best business decisions that you will make for your firm. Again, my firm would not be where it is today if I had not done all of those things. So that's tip number one. You want a better firm? Then take part in Entree Architect and not just, you know, yeah, sure, passively look at the Facebook page, but actually take part, join the network, see all the amazing content that's being produced there, all the expert training sessions going back for years. You want to learn about business? There you go. The Arc OS program and the business coaches that you just launched. I mean, you're doing some amazing things over there, Mark, and you're helping lots of firm owners.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that.
The next thing to build a better business, try something new this year, whether that's a podcast, whether that's trying to create videos, or maybe just become a guest on a podcast. Keep it simple. Interview a builder, interview an interior designer or a product rep. Focus on teaching something to your clients or providing value, not to yourself, but to the people that you're listening to. Just dedicate 1 or 2 hours per week. You know, you could do an hour on Tuesday morning and an hour on Friday afternoon. That's all you need. It's going to take time, right? But if you start small and you keep it simple, try something new, put it on your calendar. Don't schedule any other meetings during that time and stay focused on it. Then, you know, things will happen.
His name is Chris Novelli. You can learn more about Chris and all the work that he does at n3architecture.com. That's the number 3. So n3architecture.com. Check out his YouTube. Also, the YouTube is N3 Architecture. We'll have all of that on the show notes. Go to the show notes and just click the links. The book is called The Homeowner's Guide to Residential Design and Construction. You can get that on Amazon or from the resources page at n3architecture.com. Chris, thank you. thanks for coming by here at the podcast and sharing this, but even more so, thank you for all of your dedication to this community of architects. You put yourself out there every single day to share what you know. You do exactly the love, learn, share that I share at the end of this podcast. Every episode, you are a living example of that, of somebody who really cares about the people around you, the community of architects that we have. You are always looking to help grow that community. You're always learning, constantly learning. And as we've demonstrated today, you're willing to share everything you know. So thank you. Thank you for the work that you've done and for sharing it with others to help others succeed. And thanks for coming by here and sharing it here at the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It was great being here.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend. That is the best way to help us grow. And that's how we have grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Share a rating, write a review, but most important, share a link to this episode that you just listened to. Go send it off to a friend. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you to all our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources that we discussed today in today's episode, they're all found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to this podcast. Entree Architect Podcast select episodes are available for continuing education credit. Go learn more at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up, architects. Join us today at Entree Architect Network, the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. That's you, with monthly business training, business resources, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects. Your peers are there. Hundreds of them are there already. We will provide you with the support and the encouragement that you need to succeed. Hey, and this is super exciting. This is new, coming in 2024. Entree Architect Coaches. Yes, finally, after all these years, business coaching for small firm architects. It's coming to Entree Architect Network in early 2024. Join us. Try Entree Architect Network for free for 30 days. It's free for 30 days. Visit network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. That's network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. Try it. Come join us. Try it for 30 days. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and share what you know.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects. You got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris, owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my
God. One that
God.
Came out of nowhere.
Woo!
It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it. Woo!
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.